Hey shitheads, as you may know, the core message of Schitt's Creek is that love is best served unconditionally. Love on the show comes in many forms, and all of them are treated with the utmost care and dignity that keeps SC fans coming back for more. The show and the team behind it have given us so much. So maybe it's time that the SC fans return the favor.
Two fans, Blue and Jessica, have partnered together to create the STBP, a Schitt's Creek community project that needs all the help it can get. This is where you come in. They will be making a 6-minute-long video in celebration of the series finale, and they are asking Schitt's Creek fans to participate.
If you would like to be involved, please send an email to stbproject@hotmail.com with your first name, your place of origin, pronouns if you want, along with a short paragraph explaining what the show means to you. For more information, please visit the stbp.tumblr.com.
Not one of you knows how the Crows movie ends.
You told me the day you got home.
You gave me the script.
And you were both sworn to secrecy, so David is right not to trust you.
How did it end again? Like a Cro-mageddon?
Cropocalypse. But you didn't hear it from me.
Greetings, it's the Duke here.
And I'm Lady J, and this is Up Schitt's Creek, the podcast.
Dedicated to all things Schitt's Creek.
How are you, the Duke?
I'm doing really well, actually. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We're ready to get into this one, unpack this entire episode.
I am indeed. Let's get right into it.
Let's.
This is episode 511, titled Meet the Parents, and the Netflix synopsis is, Alexis brings Moira to a soap opera convention. Patrick's parents come to Schitt's Creek for his surprise party.
Lovely.
Beautiful.
Yes. I feel like for once, nobody needed the synopsis because everybody knows what this episode is about.
Yeah.
One of the most important ones of this entire show.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Significant. All the superlative words.
All of them.
I think that in order to do this episode justice, we can begin with the Moira storyline.
Sure.
Alexis comes into the room and comments that Moira's looking especially spiffy.
Which she's not wrong.
No, but I would argue that Moira doesn't look any more spiffy and glamorous than she usually does.
Yeah, well, I feel like Alexis is being that typical child that she wants to get something out of her money.
She's buttering her up.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I actually quite appreciate the fact that Alexis has done so much pre-work regarding this convention and has waited until the day of to drop the bomb on Moira because she knows how it's going to be received.
Sure.
And I think having the ammo of, like, I've already talked to them, I've booked it, you have a booth, it's all ready to go.
I mean, she printed out all of these headshots.
Yeah. I know, she's done a lot of work.
Prepared.
Yep.
I'm very proud of our bebé. She's coming up in the world.
I know.
Alexis Rose Communications is, she is crushing it, man.
But not before Moira explains to her that she's come up with a wonderful money-making scheme for them to recuperate some of the money they've already lost on Cabaret.
You know, what's funny about this is that this is for Cabaret. She makes it known, like, I need the monies for the cabarets. This is what it's for.
Which they have not even, they've barely begun rehearsals. Right. How much money has she already sunk into
this
thing?
Knowing Moira?
I know.
A lot.
I mean, we already know that she's buying chaise lounges for the salon. Like, she's going all out for this thing.
This is a big, big production.
Yeah.
Moira is going to make damn sure of that.
Yeah.
That's why now they need money.
Yeah. And she has learned that there's a hospital or a clinic in Elm Grove that you can sign up to do tests and make $200 a week.
This is like something you see in one of those comedies of a kid in college Mm-hmm. Like where they can sell their kidney, they go to the sperm bank, yep. and they do all that stuff. This is just one of those yep. typical, you know, situations
yeah.
you find yourself in when you are in need of money.
Except that Moira describes these tests as nugatory, which brings us to our first segment.
Moira say what?
Nugatory means of no value or importance.
Right.
So it's just a very fancy way of saying like, simple tests that won't be that big a deal.
No big deal. Just these little medical tests.
God knows what they're going to poke and prod you with. Or,
but hold on. It's only Alexis and Johnny
<That's right. laughs>
that she wants to sign up for this.
Right.
Not herself. No. Not even David. Mind you, don't God forbid. Touch David. But yeah, Alexis and Johnny.
I mean, you know.
Expendable? I don't know. Gosh. I don't know what's running through her mind. But, you know, whatever. She wants to sign him up for this. And Alexis is not even on that, not going along with that train of thought. Mm-mm. She knows what she has had planned for this day for Moira. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is a conversation that has been had before, because immediately when it's brought up, Moira rolls her eyes and she's like, look, I already said no, this is not happening. And Alexis is very much adamant that this is going to be a thing that happens today. You're going. You need the money.
Yep.
She's not wrong.
No. And the money's good. $2,000
yeah.
in an afternoon just for showing up and signing some headshots and taking right. some photos.
I mean, we know now, having seen this, it's going to be a lot more than $2,000 that she's going to make from
oh,
this.
Oh, yeah. So Moira sort of begrudgingly is like, okay, fine, right. let's give it a shot. You've already done all this work. I don't have to like think too hard about it. I just have to show up.
I also think a part of it, too, is the pride in Moira. She sees Alexis and she has her shit together in this. And she's like, look at you.
Yeah, there is this moment on her when she gets this look on her face when Alexis is like puts her foot down, literally, mm-hmm. like stamps her
literally.
Foot and storms out of the room. Moira gets this look on her face like, oh, okay. Like, I see you are, you know, doing your job here. You right. know, you are being my publicist. Cool. So they go and they're in, I guess, some sort of holding area for the talent. It looks sure. like a little green room where they have like some crafty setup. And, you know, she's like looking around, not really loving this whole environment. And then Gloria Gregson walks in.
Oh, Gloria Gregson.
Moira. No. No. It is the Gloria Gregson. Oh, darling. Well, look at you. You look gorgeous. I'm so glad you're here, darling. I'm usually the only marquee name at these things.
I'm shocked by my presence as well.
And I am Alexis Rose, Moira's publicist and daughter.
Oh, daughter? More like sister.
You.
I fucking fall to the floor when she screams out, the Gloria Gregson, the way she says that. It's almost like she's announcing
yes.
to everybody else mm-hmm. as to deflect, I yep. guess.
Absolutely.
It's very Moira-esque. Like, yeah. this is so Moira to do something like this at this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning, too, like, we rarely see Moira have such deference for another actor
yeah.
of her caliber, let's say. She's always, like, minimizing people, you know, with the way that she, like, nicknames them and mm-hmm. sort of name drops them very casually. But when she sees Gloria Gregson walk in, she immediately gets like, oh, my God, I can't be seen here. It's Gloria Gregson. Like, it's the Gloria. Like, she freaks out. And we don't really see that from her.
No, which tells us this person is a very big deal.
Right.
In this industry. But we know that Moira is also a very big deal in this industry. Clearly, she's recognized True. By Gloria.
True.
And she has
a booth at the convention. People want to see her.
She even says, like, I thought I was the only one, like the only big deal here. Mm-hmm. And Moira, you know, she has to be she plays coy in that moment. Mm-hmm. Oh, tell me, I'm as surprised as you are by my right. presence here, you know? There's almost like that thing where immediately when these two big shots come head to head with one another, where me as like a viewer, I'm immediately like on Moira's side. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It feels like a big deal, like a headlining head-to-head event, right, or something, and you kind of have to like place your bets, you know?
Yeah. But I also feel very protective of Moira in that.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, Gloria Gregson. This is Moira Rose.
Right.
Like, you have no idea, one, where she's been.
Mm-hmm.
Or how,
or maybe she does.
Maybe she does. But also, like, how fucking amazing this woman is.
Right.
Sure, Gloria has a story.
And a following.
Yeah, whatever. But this is fucking Moira Rose, so.
But I think you're hitting on something important here, which is that Gloria's presence here at this convention helps Moira see that there is more to her life,
yeah,
than just her celebrity.
Sure.
And, you know, she has been in a big way clinging to her sense of self being wrapped in her celebrity and her, yeah, status. And the insight that Gloria gives her about doing this convention circuit and sort of allowing yourself to graduate to this next phase of your career is helping Moira put into perspective that her life goes beyond her name in lights. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Look at how much she's accomplished just in the last couple of years. She's really shown herself to be a caring mom, a caring wife, somebody who can be a pillar of her community. And those are not nothing achievements and accomplishments. And now she gets to also reap the benefits of the fact that she has a name that people recognize.
I think you really hit the nail on the head on that one, because she takes a step back, and you can tell as she's looking at Gloria when she's talking to her about, you know, there's a sense of freedom in letting go. Mm-hmm. But also, for all we know, this has been somewhat of an easy ride for Gloria. She's done with whatever she was doing before, whatever acting she was doing. She did the wine thing. She was able to have a vineyard in France. And now she's doing these whenever she feels like it. You know, these little where she goes and she signs and she takes the feet pictures. Because she can. And she wants to. No big deal. Just going to make some money off of this. And then I'm going to go to my home in France. And I'm going to live the best life. But with Moira, we very much had the fall from grace. And we had the complete having to restart everything over again. And I mean, at an older age, I will say, you know, it's harder. It has been, for sure. We've been along this ride with her, but there's a lot more, I feel like, pride there that Moira should have, because, yeah, sure, all this stuff has happened to her, but look at you right now in this moment. You're in the same exact place that Gloria Gregson is in.
Exactly.
What? That's fucking amazing.
Exactly.
And you've done all these amazing things. And mind you, you just finished filming The Crows Have Eyes. I don't know. I'm very proud. At the end of the day, Gloria is not better than her. And I feel like there was, when she first saw her, there was a little bit of shame. Like, oh my God, cover my face. Don't look at me. I'm not here. You didn't see me. But yeah, honey, we saw you. She saw you. And everybody saw her there too.
And not only is it the thing of, yeah, well, she's here too. But it's that thing of, and what? So you're here. Yeah. You are here because there's hundreds of people out there who want to see you. Celebrate that.
Yeah.
Who cares? Who cares that your celebrity has taken a different shape and form at this part of your life and career, you know?
Yeah.
You still have people that love you and care about you and revel in that, appreciate that.
I want to ask you this, because while I appreciated Gloria's little spiel to Moira and the advice that she gave her, I liked that because I really think it opened Moira's mind up to everything. You know, there are things that she can do to make money and have fun with it and be Moira Rose. But the only thing that bothered me was that last line where she said, "There is a freedom in letting go." There is different ways that that can be interpreted, I feel like. And while when I originally saw this, I felt like, right on, man. Like, yeah, just like, fuck it. Let go of everybody's ideas or opinions and all that, cool. But at the same time, you see Moira's face when she says that, and she's just kind of like a, hmm. She's thinking about how I feel like, how to take that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can I interpret that? How should I interpret that? So when I watched it again, I interpreted it in a different way, and I feel like she's telling her, like, fuck it. Like, we're all here. We're just trying to make a buck at this point. And that's not Moira. To just let go is not Moira. She very much has it together herself. She is very much in control of herself and what she chooses and what she does. And I don't ever see Moira just letting go and like, fuck, just let the world take me where it will and I'll do this and I'll do that. She can't. I feel like she needs to be in control of herself because that's how she thrives.
I think I've always heard that and interpreted the line about there's a freedom in letting it go in the sense of letting go of the stuff that Gloria was talking about earlier in that monologue of hers, which was, you know, worrying about where is her next part going to come from? How is she going to keep her name at the high status that it's at? Like, those are the things that she would occupy her time and brain space about.
Right.
And those are the things that she's let go of. And I think that for Moira, there is a lesson to be learned there. Or maybe not a lesson to be learned, but, you know, a nugget of wisdom to be taken from that. Because, and actually I would argue too that Moira has already gotten there. Like, you yeah. know, maybe not season one Moira, but season five Moira, I think, has learned that lesson and yeah. has sort of embodied that aspect of herself. Because, you know, she is secure in her life here. Does she always want better and bigger? Of course. But she knows where she's at, and I think she's confident with it, if not comfortable. And so that's how I've always interpreted that line. Okay. Letting go of that stressful worrying about your place in the industry and just allowing the money and the fame and the accolades to come wherever they may, be it at a convention, be it at a speaking engagement where they just want a face that they know. Or
I don't know. It just really stuck out to me and I couldn't not address it.
I think it's valid. I mean, it's a valid interpretation. And you're right. Like, in that regard, you're right that Moira is not somebody who's just going to take a back seat in her life. That's never yeah. who she's been, and I don't see her ever changing that way, or, you know, not being that way.
I guess just my thing in this, I genuinely don't know how to take it. While I'm always like, I always have my opinion, I always know how I feel about something, like with this one, I don't know. I don't know how I feel.
Well, but I think the most important thing here is not so much how as the audience to receive that, but to watch Moira and see how she's going to receive that.
Yeah,
that's down the line.
Very true.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it starts with her acceptance of the fact that she's here at this convention today. And let's do this thing. She goes out there with Alexis, and Alexis gives the whole spiel about, you know, 30 seconds, tickets in hand, or it's the back of the line. One foot is 75 and it's 150 for both. What a deal.
Oh yeah.
And she sits down and takes her post with her marker and her headshot, and here we go.
Yeah. That had to make her feel good.
I think so.
It would make me feel good.
I think so. You know,
to have people coming up to me signing autographs, I mean, or signing my headshots, and like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I am still somebody.
Exactly. Moira is a person who, you know, if we think about her headspace in this moment, right? She's filmed a movie, which in her mind and the way that it's been sort of marketed to her, you know, mm-hmm. is going to be her comeback vehicle.
Sure.
And now she's thrown herself into helming the ship of this iconic show, which means a lot to her, and bringing that to life. So this is a Moira who feels like she's back in the swing of things, right in the thick of it again, you know? She's the quadruple threat, yes. You know? She's crushing it.
Yeah,
that's the headspace that she's in. And I think that she gets to view this whole convention bit as part of that also.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this storyline. You know what was really fun for me in this was to see her in her element. And she, I mean, if nothing, Moira loves attention. And she loves positive attention. And she was getting that in this. Her fans love her. That's obvious. I mean, we already know this. And just to see her with this whole line, it could have went any other way. It could have, you know, there could have been nobody there to see her. But there was a long ass line of fans there to see her. And I was really happy for her in this. And the fact that Alexis convinced her to do this made it that much better for me.
Yeah. Was right there by her side the whole time. Mm-hmm. Planned everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice.
It was. I don't know if we've ever talked about this before, but I really like that they made her an ex-soap opera star. I like that was what she did.
Yeah.
Prior to all, you know, all of this. It could have been a lot of other things that they made her famous for, but a soap opera star, I kind of like that.
It's kind of perfect because soap opera stars are in that weird category of celebrity where it's like, if you know, they're the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
But then in like the mainstream, not so much, you know?
True.
So it kind of has put Moira in this category of like niche celebrity that she has traded in her whole life, yeah. You know?
But she's also done movies. We know that.
Well, obviously. Made for TV Lifetime movies.
Yeah, sure.
This storyline is clearly the B story of this episode.
Sure.
But in an episode that only has two storylines going for it, it carries its weight. And it is just as important and significant to Moira's growth and evolution as anything. So, yeah good stuff.
It is.
Why don't we take a break?
Sounds good.
And when we get back, we'll
unpack the heavy stuff.
Oh, boy. We'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
And we're back.
Hello, you.
So.
Yes.
Right off the bat, before we get into everything, I just want to applaud this show for the whole surprise party thing is such a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
I love this whole episode opens with David announcing to his family that he is throwing a surprise party, and God help all of you if you fuck this up for me.
Yeah.
You better keep this secret. You better do your, you know, keep it quiet. Better show up. Better yell surprise. Do your thing. This is so not what this episode is about.
Not at all.
This party.
We're here ready to party at this point.
This party is like the last thing on anyone's mind by the end of this episode. I applaud it. I love when the show pulls moves like this, yeah, where it sort of lulls us into a sense of like, oh, we know what's going to happen here. We know all the tropes of comedy here. And then they just throw us a curveball of such in-depth and beautiful, heartwarming, like human moments between people that just, you know, that you can't do without in your life.
The show is pretty damn amazing at doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in light of that, I think we're going to sort of change up our format here a bit. You know, you guys have heard us say on this podcast leading up to this episode that we want to hear from you guys. We want to share your stories, your thoughts, your insights and perspectives on this episode, and not just our own. And a few of you, you know, took us up on that offer.
Yes. And I do hope that if you didn't take that opportunity to reach out to us, we're not done listening to you. I mean, by no means does it mean that you can't still reach out to us with your stories, with whatever it is that you want to say, even your criticisms on this episode itself. Yeah. Like, we want to hear it.
That door is always open.
Absolutely.
It always has been. It always will continue to be. But that being said, we are very grateful.
Yes.
To the few of you who did reach out to us and did want to share yourselves.
You know, it's meant the world to us because you are opening yourselves up to us. And I mean, come on, how amazing is that for someone to be that big-hearted, to be able to do that to a complete stranger? You know, that's pretty fucking awesome. And I applaud all of you.
And so we thought that we would take this opportunity to read some of the comments and emails we've received.
Yes.
From you. And, you know, we'll sort of see how that, we'll see where that takes us, if you will. So first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to our listener, London, who reached out quite a while ago. And, you know, in fairness to them, we have not had a chance or the forum really to read the thoughts that they shared with us. Mm-hmm. But with regard to this episode, they had some insights that they wanted to share.
Yes.
So I'm just going to read that portion of the email we got from London. The Meet the Parents episode is one of the most important things on TV. I listened to Dan speak about that episode on the EW podcast. Shout out to the EW podcast. I'll just say that the tenderness he wrote and acted that episode with is something we'll all be forever grateful for. It was short and sweet, but
yeah.
London, that episode really resonated with them. Mm-hmm. And they shared a lot of thoughts about the whole David and Patrick, you know, relationship that we see unfold over the right. seasons. But I thought it was worth mentioning that
absolutely.
For them, this episode
it's important. It was important enough for them to bring it up and for them to want to address it. We've gotten a lot of messages on our social medias about people addressing different things. And I feel like this is always the episode that resonates with so many people. This is always the one that is of the utmost importance with people. And I mean, come on, rightfully so.
And that brings us to a email we got from longtime listener, longtime writer in.
Is this Frank?
Frank.
Yeah, Frank.
Yeah. Frank just continues to really deliver.
Blow our minds too?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, not only with the episode specific, like after he listens to an episode, he'll comment and, you know, provide his thoughts. But, you know, he heard our call to action and he really went in depth and really broke down this storyline beat by beat. And the truth is that it sort of is set the framework for us and how we want to approach and discuss this episode.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're going to do here, folks. We're going to, you know, read his email and take it from there.
Yeah.
This is probably the most impactful episode the show has done. It's an achingly joyous story that not only addresses the enormous anxieties behind the decision to come out, but also how empowering such an act can be. As someone who had their own less than ideal experience, I can understand and very much empathize with the emotional burden Patrick endured and how it consumed him. It's also the capper to Patrick's journey to understand and grow into his authentic self, and not just in his sexuality, but in his identity as a man in general. Right off the bat. Tons to unpack there.
Yes.
I think that the stage as it's been set in this episode is that this is very much Patrick's coming out story episode. And that is the focus of this episode.
It is.
But it also lays the groundwork to allow for moments of grace from David, from Johnny, from Roland, from Patrick's parents, really from everybody, you know, the entire town.
Yeah. The approach that this show took in telling this story was so remarkable and so refreshing, I guess, in a way, because you have all these characters who we know them, we love them, they are who they are, we know who they are. Take Roland, for example, can be obnoxious, can get on our last nerve, but he was such a comedic relief in this. In the moment where you would think like, oh, we don't need this right now, we very much do, because it gives us a laugh. It gives us, we can take a deep breath when he's able to throw this comedy our way, because come on, it's very welcome for all of us when we're in this like moment of there's like this tension with Johnny and Patrick's parents, and then there's Roland, and you're like, thank you for that. It's so significant the way they do that with each character individually.
You must be the Brewers. I'm Clint. This is my wife, Marcy. What a special moment this is for all of us, huh?
You must be David's dad.
Oh, no. I do get that all the time, though. It's, you got David's handsome looks there and then my face.
Yeah, I'm David's father, Johnny Rose.
Johnny, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Patrick tells me you run the motel.
More like runs it into the ground.
Oh, we do have a lot of fun around here, don't we?
We do, sometimes. Roland, do you want to get the room key for
them?
You know, I want to talk about something that more and more in the recent present has been sort of like ringing in my ears as we are coming up on the final season of the show and everything. When a momentous episode like this happens, one that is full of tension, as you mentioned, and the stakes are so high and the emotions are running rampant, I think when you are watching it for the first time, because your heart is so invested in the main emotional stuff that's happening, we have a tendency to sort of not allow for the comedy to come in. You know? Like we hear it, we see it, but we don't, I think we're so invested in the emotional beats that it doesn't really like hit us in the funny bone in that first watch.
Yeah.
It's not until, you know, you get to rewatch it and really spend time with it that you can then sort of see it for the fabric, you know, like pull the fabric apart a little bit, and you can hear what Roland is saying and doing here. And it's truly like so funny, like that he actually thinks that he's as good looking as David and could pass for his father. You know what I mean? Like,
Yes. Like
those things are so funny. I mean, that's like deep comedy that the show is so good at. But I think like the first time I watched this episode, it was like, okay, next, you know, like, you know, you can't,
right.
you can't appreciate those comedic beats for what they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's a thought that I've been having a lot lately, especially about this show. But in general, you know, when something we love so much is having this like moment, you know, and you can't sort of see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, no, Roland is definitely that comedic relief, that bringing those moments of levity here that are much needed. And part of what Roland is bringing to the table here is when Clint and Marcy start talking about, you know, how proud they are of what Patrick and David, you know, are doing, because Patrick's just sort of, you know, keeping them abreast of their progress here and how proud they are. And Johnny, I think sort of like in that moment of like parent to parent, you know, is like, I'll tell you, I had my doubts about those two, you know, about their business and stuff. And like, you know, commingling personal with the professional. And that's when you see the look of shock, I guess, on Patrick's parents' faces.
Confusion.
Confusion.
It's very much confusion.
Yeah.
And they are like, wait, what was the last bit? You know,
he thinks that what they didn't understand was the business partnership that they had.
I love Johnny for that.
Yeah.
Me too. I love
me
that his too. Brain spins a million miles a minute and comes out with like, oh, you yep. didn't know about the business? Like yep. their relationship is just such a part of who they are and their lives yep. that it never occurs to him that that could be the part that is like, what, you know?
Also smart. And it also speaks to what Dan Levy has been saying about the show the entire exactly. time. This should never be something that is questioned or
confusing.
Yeah, confusing to anybody.
Yeah.
And this should just Creek. Be a part of our like daily narrative. It just people are people. Love is love. This is what's happening.
And to quote Dan, too, it's like Schitt's Creek is a place where that is the case.
Yes.
So when Johnny tries to clarify about the business, Roland has that moment of like, I mean, it looks like you two just got some shocking information. Like, you Roland, know.
With a little beats.
Yeah. And it's genuinely, again, so good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it like is. it's just good. And Clint and Marcy sort of just excuse themselves. Like there's not much more that needs to be said between the four of them in that room anymore. Like they have just received some information they didn't know. And they excuse themselves from that situation, which prompts Johnny to go running to the cafe where David is on a site survey.
Okay. This, the beginning of this scene is so hilarious.
It's so good.
Because Twyla is very much trying to protect the cafe. Well, David is just like, let's just say there's a salmonella outbreak today. Okay, cool. Yeah,
it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. It's a restaurant after all. This can happen. Normal. Totally fine. But hi. I love, again,
yeah.
the comedy in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
It's spot on.
It is.
He has told Patrick that there's a salmonella outbreak at the cafe, which in an effort to basically keep him away from the cafe all day, because that's where he's setting up the party.
Yeah.
So he's on a site survey with Stevie, and they're, I guess, scoping out the place like they haven't been there a million times. Like, what is he surveying?
I don't know what he's doing. He's just being extra cautious yeah. or extra.
That's what it is. He's moment. Being very extra because, I mean, in his own words, he hates surprise parties. He doesn't believe in them.
Yeah.
This is the only surprise party he will ever throw in his life, and it's for the love of his life. Mm-hmm. So he is being so extra about it. Like, there will be no fork out of place, you know, like mm-hmm. everything will be perfect for this.
Someone's going to cry by the end of the night.
Even if it's just him. Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then Johnny bursts into the cafe out of breath and is like, David, the Brewers are here. And again, comedy. They're not supposed to be here for 11 minutes.
Oh my God. And Stevie's face in that moment, too, when David says that, she's just like, oh my God, this guy. She totally rolls her eyes and like, really? You're serious?
He has gone into full on like event planner
but
mode.
That's David.
No,
though.
I know.
Like, that is so him to be this, again, extra.
Yeah.
With this whole thing.
Random question for you. They're aware that you and Patrick are, romantically involved, right?
Of course they are. Why wouldn't they be?
Well, they're definitely aware that you're business partners. It's just that, if I recall, at one point, Patrick was engaged to a woman, so...
Okay, what did you say to them?
Nothing. It's more how they reacted when I brought up the fact that you two were romantically in business with each other.
Ew.
Yeah, they looked a little shaken.
Shaken?
Well, upset.
Upset?
David, they know, right?
Of course they know. I wouldn't have asked them to come here if I didn't think they knew we were in a relationship. They call the store all the time. I mean, what do they think? I'm just his business partner?
Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, everybody calm down. Nobody say a word to anybody.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
What did I just say?
I love that. What did I just say?
There, David is doing some things here that I love. I mean, I guess it's Dan doing them, but like when Johnny says, you know, his parents are aware that you're in a relationship, the look on his face is one of like disdainful pity.
Yes. Yes.
Like, Come on. They know.
Oh, look how cute you are, not knowing anything that's happening.
I love that.
Absolutely.
I love how it goes from the height of that level of confidence to spiraling out of control as the wheels start spinning and he's starting to put together that, like, oh my God, they don't know. And how, like, why do I think they do just because I talk to them all the time? And, you know, you can see him like start to unravel a little bit.
Well, because everything is falling into place. He's never thought about these little tiny, really to him, small details, because he's had this life so far with Patrick and everything has been okay.
Yeah.
Everything has been what they've laid it out to be for themselves. He has spoken to the Brewers over the phone. But also, you know, David is not that kind of a person. He's never been that kind of a person to get into like intimate conversations with anybody. So that's just par for the course, you know. Okay, they call. They know who I am. Everything's good.
Right.
And it isn't until it's being laid out in front of him that like, oh my God. I actually don't know if they know.
Right.
I've never asked the question.
Right.
To Patrick.
Yeah.
Have you told your parents about us? But also how he approaches this with Patrick.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Because he could very easily come to him and be like, what the fuck? You haven't told them? Like, hello? We've been in this relationship. Everything was supposed to be great. Why wouldn't you tell me? But he doesn't do any of that. He's very careful the way he approaches him because he doesn't want to assume that this was intentional. He doesn't want to assume anything. He has the grace to approach Patrick and be like, you tell me what's going on.
I would argue that while I agree, yes, like David is approaching this whole thing with that grace. Yes. But I also can't see him approaching it any other way. I think that the minute he has like a second to think, presumably from his walk from the pizza place to Patrick's apartment.
Right.
I think he knows that the only way to approach this subject is the way that he does ultimately. Mm. Because how can you come at Patrick with anything but understanding? No,
and I think that's why I say he's being careful, because David has always been the kind of person that's very straightforward. He doesn't hide his emotions. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. He's just there. And he's also been that way with Patrick. Lovingly, but he's blunt. Because that's who David is. But in this, he's careful how he approaches this, mm-hmm. because he doesn't want to be blunt here. He doesn't want to be aggressive in any way.
Because this is not a thing in which to be blunt aggressive.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To go back to Frank's email, the consensus on this episode is that David deals with the situation in an amazing manner. A number of reviewers have stated this episode demonstrates how much David has grown since the barbecue and how mature and selfless he has become. I always felt that that is a somewhat inaccurate assessment. It's not that David has matured so much. It's that he is healed and feels secure in their relationship. He trusts Patrick enough to give him a chance to explain about this latest deception. David probably already had an idea why Patrick hasn't told his parents. When Patrick acknowledged his fears, it confirmed what David already suspected, that the shame and guilt Patrick was feeling had nothing to do with him or their relationship. This was not like the situation with Rachel. David can be completely supportive because he's been in Patrick's place. It's partly why he was willing to go above and beyond for him. It's why he told Patrick that he should come out only when he's ready and only he gets to dictate how. The minute that David arrives at Patrick's apartment, very cautiously asks the probing question of, hey, I just realized that I've never spoken to your parents outside of the store and they know about me, right? They know about us, right? Yeah. The minute he gets all those questions out and sees Patrick's physical reaction before he even says a word, David goes into this mode of like comfort and support, like immediately. Anything else just falls away and it becomes about him being there for this person that he loves. They sit down together. He puts his arm on his back, starts rubbing his back, listens to him, completely just like everything else washes away and it's just about Patrick in that moment.
It's also a very protective kind of a thing. I feel that David takes that on with Patrick. He very much wants to protect him and his emotions and everything that Patrick has really been building in himself up to this point. There's been a lot there that Patrick has been able to realize about himself and how strong he really is as a person. And now he's confronted with this, like, okay, this is a reality in my life. And David takes on that role, like, you know what? This is going to be okay. And like you said, the rubbing him on his back and like the nurturing, that he wants to protect him. He wants him to know that everything is going to be okay. And as Frank said, there is so much empowerment there that David is giving to him, I think, that Patrick didn't realize that he had when he tells him, like, this is yours. This isn't anybody else's. This is yours. This is your moment. This is everything that you need it to be. Nobody can tell you how to go about this.
Right.
This is for you to decide for yourself.
Well, and I think because what ends up happening, right, is Patrick has to now, for lack of a better word, own up to the fact that
David,
that he has not told his parents. Yeah. And that puts him in a position of like trying to, you know, defend why and explain. You know, he says, I know my parents are good people. And I always thought that I was going to tell them the next time I saw them. But then, you know, I didn't go home for the holidays and time got away from us and things have been so good here. And those are him trying to, you know, explain the order of events that have occurred, which have prevented him from taking the step with his parents. But really, and what David reminds him, as we've just said, is that none of that matters, because this is something that is completely yours, that you own, that you dictate when and if ever you are ready to. And only you get to decide how that's going to go down, where and when and why and all of that, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting because Patrick is giving, you know, these excuses with David and trying to explain himself. And it's heartbreaking when he says that, I know my parents are good people. He knows they're good people. He just doesn't know what their reaction to this is going to be. And that's fair. Yeah. I mean, that is fair. As far as him being their child, that's fair. Those are your parents. It's okay to not know what is going to happen. I don't know what my words that I'm going to speak to them, what kind of a reaction that's going to get from them. I don't know. And that scares me. That worries me how much this will change things in my life, in their life, in our lives. And I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know if I'm ready to see
if it's going to change.
If it's going to change, how it's going to change, what it's going to change. Has he given it thought? He must have. If he hasn't told them,
absolutely,
it's enough for him not to have said anything
right
to them yet, because it worries him. It worries him, the reaction that he's going to get from his parents.
Of course.
But David is there understanding that.
Yeah.
Worry, that fear in Patrick. And that's why he so amazingly says to him, like, I can be just your business partner tonight.
Yeah.
My God, the love there to be able to compromise who you are and what you're about in life, because that person that you love so much and you care about so much doesn't know what to do, but you are just trying to make it a little bit easier on them. If not just, you know, if not for a couple days, a couple weeks, just for tonight. Just for tonight, I don't want to mess anything up.
In Frank's words, this scene sends a nice message to the more seasoned members of the LGBTQ community that we always have to show our empathy and support for those who are dealing with this. It's a reminder that each person stumbles at their own pace, and we can't force our own agenda onto others when it comes to something so momentous. Because David has learned, you know, that Patrick has not told his parents. And, you know, and even though Patrick says, you know, like, I'm going to tell them the next time I see them, I promise you. Again, David's like, listen, man, like, I'm not putting that on you. Like, I'm not even asking you for that. I'm just letting you know, like, I just, now it's out in the open. Now I know they don't know, and that's okay. And, yeah, you know, whatever. However, slight wrinkle. I've invited them here for your surprise party.
So sorry. I did this.
Oops. and that's what prompts the whole comment about, like, I can be just your business partner, right, for tonight. Like, tonight doesn't have to be the night, you know, it's, yeah, okay. And Patrick wants to, though. In his words, I can't make you do that, you know, and I want them to know. And maybe this is good, you know, maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
But again, it's, and I'll keep saying this because I genuinely believe it, it's love. It's the love that Patrick feels for David, because he wants this to be his life. He wants everybody to know about it because this is his life. But it's also the love that Patrick feels for himself, because he doesn't just owe it to David, he owes it to himself, to the both of them, you know, to their relationship. And he says that.
Which makes the next scene, I think, for my money, this next scene is the scene of the episode. When David, knowing what he now knows, knowing that Patrick has not come out to his parents, knowing that Patrick is going to come out to his parents, knowing that Patrick's parents already know, takes the added step of showing up at their doorstep to try and figure out a way to navigate this as smoothly as possible, yeah, for everybody involved, not just for Patrick, but for his parents as well, and for the sake of the party that he's so painstakingly worked on.
Sure.
And mind you, walking into that room, I think with an expectation, or maybe just simply not knowing if it's going to be a hostile environment. Because Johnny didn't him feel good about their reaction.
That's very true. He doesn't know that. He just knows that they were surprised.
And Johnny says that they didn't handle it very well, seemingly.
Fair. You know, what's interesting to me, too, is as David approaches the door, you see him take a couple deep breaths. Like, ooh, okay, here we go. This is going to happen right now. And we don't know. We don't know what he's going to say. We don't know how he's going to approach it. We don't know if he's going to put on this facade of like, oh, no. My dad was confused.
Right. And we also don't know what the Brewers are thinking.
Right. We have no clue. We just know that they're confused and surprised by what Johnny said. That's it.
Right.
That's it. When he enters the room, Mr. Brewer is sitting on this bed, like he's contemplating the past 30 some years of Patrick's life. Like, he has no idea what has happened, you know, and that's how it looks. It looks like they're thinking, what did we do?
But I will say this, though, you know, when he knocks on their door, and I believe it's Marcy that opens it for him, right? Yes. There is, I think there's a warmth there. Like, I don't know, now, maybe now because I know how it all goes down, I'm sort of reading into it a little bit. But like when Marcy opens that door, it doesn't feel like a hostile environment.
It doesn't. When she opens the door, you know, we see her, we see Mr. Brewer. And like I said, he's sitting on that bed, like, he's just looking like, he's thinking, like a million thoughts are going through his head in this moment. But she looks at David, not knowing who he is, honestly, when she opens the door, because she's never met him.
That's true. He has to sort of introduce himself.
Right. And the very first thing is, please come in. And what I said earlier, how he takes a couple deep breaths and we don't know. We don't know how he's going to approach us. We don't know how David is going to approach Patrick's parents or the situation at all.
Except we do know that he's brought a gift basket with stuff.
Of course he has.
So he's probably, it's probably a schmoozing type of approach, you know?
This is what David does best, honestly. Yeah. Like gift baskets for everybody.
That's right.
You know? When he introduces himself, she asks him that question, so you're not with Patrick? And he kind of says, oh no, I very much am. Without hesitation, nothing. It's like, no. I'm not, this isn't going to be lied about in this moment. Do you notice when David first steps into the room, see Patrick's dad, like giving him this look, he's kind of like doing the once over. That's such a parent thing to do when they meet somebody that their child is with. Like, it's such a parent thing to do. Talk to any parent and you're just like, yeah. Aww. Yeah. Because you're just like, who is this? You know what I mean?
You're just taking them all
in. Yes, you are. You're like, you think immediately as like a parent, you're like, all right, I know what you're about. You don't. Like, already you have this like image in your mind. And I like that. I appreciated that little moment because it was, again, very, very normal, very parent thing.
Yeah.
And I like how they had that. It was very like obvious that he was like scanning.
Yeah.
It was cool.
And so Marcy is like more confused because when David says, like, you know, I'm so sorry for what my father said, she's like, wait, so you guys aren't together? And he's like, no, we are.
Yes.
And then Patrick's dad jumps in with, you know, is it something we did or said?
Ugh.
Which, I mean, I think for David, but for all of us in the audience, the little hairs on the back of our heads stand up, you know, when we hear that.
Because immediately you go to a place where it's like, oh.
Negativity, oh, you know. Okay. We're like, oh, this is they where we're
don't,
going.
They don't get this, accept this.
Right.
Understand this.
Do you think if we'd done things differently, that Patrick would still...
I understand that this news can come as a shock to some people, but he is still the same person, and it's his birthday. And
David, we're not upset about Patrick being gay.
No.
Oh, my God. For a minute, I thought this was going to get very dark.
Here again.
Yeah.
Dan, David, same person as far as I'm concerned, is doing things, little moments that are just so beautiful. The way that his voice lilts when he says, it's his birthday. Like, please, can we just not ruin his birthday? And then when he gets cut off about like, no, we're not upset at all, like that's not what this is, the way that he does like the quick wipe of his like, you know, impending like, tear.
Oh
yeah, like, oh, okay. I thought this, you know, and like it's just so human, it's so real.
Yeah.
And he's portraying all of these emotions so authentically. And I'm along for the journey with him in this episode, you know? I mean, as I am with everybody in this episode, but David is serving me lots of little moments and that I'm really like latching onto, you know?
I can't get enough of, again, the protective nature that David takes in this when he says like, it's his birthday. Like it's almost like he's begging, like,
I know,
come on, guys. Please, just for him, just for tonight. Let's just all
he's
be
the
okay.
Same person you've always known, and it's his birthday.
Ah, man, I love that. I love that he gets so
protective of this person that he loves so much.
In Frank's email, he describes this scene. Further, it is incredibly brave of David to go to the Brewers. He has no idea what he is walking into. As he said, it could have gotten very dark. Yet here is David Rose acting on his true nature, the real him that he hates to admit exists but can't hide anymore, the one Jocelyn sensed from the beginning, the one Patrick could always see, the one the Brewers can clearly see, and after this episode, the person the whole town can see. It's interesting, isn't it? I think it's such a commentary on the, let's call it a fact, that when you have love and support in your life, when you are feeling loved, mm-hmm. it just opens up your heart to everybody around you.
Yes.
And it just creates more love.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like reminiscent of when Dan gave his speech at the GLAAD Awards.
Yeah. Yes.
And he boiled it down to those three things: empathy, support, and love.
Yeah.
And how if you have those, man, you just build more of that in your life, and you are able to proliferate that in your circle, you know.
Yeah. But that's why I keep saying love, man. Love is the name of all of this, because love breeds sympathy. Love breeds, or empathy. Love breeds support. I mean, you know, if you love somebody, you love somebody all the way. You don't just half love somebody. You don't just love somebody with exceptions.
Right.
You love them all the way, man. And you love them hard, because that's what people need.
Yeah. So that's why, after, you know, everything sort of comes out in the open between David and Patrick's parents, right? He now knows that they're cool, that it's not going to be a problem. And then Marcy is like, oh, but wait now, like, we don't know what to do. We don't want to make this whole thing awkward. Like, should we not come to the party? Because if we are there and he hasn't told us, like, how is that going to be for you guys, you know? And once again, David is able to act with grace here,
yeah,
towards his parents.
So what do we do now? Not go to the party? I don't want to make him uncomfortable.
No. We are all going to the party. Patrick is planning on telling you tonight. So I think the best birthday gift we could give him at this point is to just keep him in the closet until then. I know that came out wrong, but we all understand what I'm saying, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whew. Oh my gosh, we totally skipped over the part where Johnny comes in to the scene.
Oh my gosh. Trying to do damage control.
How are you, David? Happy, I hope.
I didn't know, honestly, where he was going with that when he walked in. But David is very much like, hi, what? What do you want?
No, it's cool. They're cool. Like,
yeah.
Happy, I hope. That's all that really matters in the end.
I love that. Oh, man.
Johnny is nothing but just trying to just do the most here.
Yeah.
You know, he knows he messed up at the beginning. He's just trying to make sure that everything's okay, that everyone's okay. He's so cute.
He is. He's putting in overtime to make sure everything is good.
He really is.
Yeah.
It's so cute. Happy, I hope.
Oh, God.
So they go to the party.
Well,
I shouldn't say they go to the party.
Everybody has gathered at the cafe.
The lights are out. Everyone is huddled in their spot for the surprise.
I love how this begins, this scene, though, because David is, again, so extra.
He has Stevie on lookout.
Yes. He's coming.
God. And then he's like, okay, do we have someone on lights? Yes, good. Okay. It's just going to be a surprise because we couldn't nail happy birthday at rehearsal.
Stewardy.
They had a rehearsal.
Wow. Of course they did. This is David throwing this party, after all.
The only surprise party he'll ever throw.
And if Moira had anything to do with it, you know, she got this. She's like, should we rehearse first?
Yeah, it's so cute. So then Patrick comes in, the lights go up, everybody yells surprise, and he does his best to pretend like he's surprised.
Oh my god.
We were just having a dinner.
I really am surprised. And then he like goes over to his parents and hugs them, and there's this cute little like parent-son moment where he's like, I thought you guys said you were out of town. And they're like,
we are.
Very cute.
Yeah.
It's almost like sort of like it's not in the forefront either sound-wise. Like, yeah. like the sound yes. mixing of that is very like we're sort of eavesdropping on that mm-hmm. moment. It's very perfect.
I also loved in that moment, you very much hear Johnny, happy birthday, Patrick. Like, I kind of just like fading away. Like, yeah. I'm really glad they included him in that little... The little background noise, I guess,
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah.
They had him in there.
So, David, once again, moment of grace. I'm going to let you guys catch up, you know, knowing exactly what's about to go down, but yeah. like just allowing it, giving them the space to do it their way. And his parents like go to sit in a booth. And before Patrick joins them, here's another little moment that I love.
What if they don't react the way I think they will?
And I will be here, and we'll get through it together.
Okay. I love you.
It's like this little conspiratorial,
yeah.
I love you whispering to each other. Like, they, like, lean their heads into each other, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
It speaks to Patrick's, like, you know, even on this precipice that he's about to jump off of, like, he's still... maybe a little bit apprehensive, maybe a little bit scared, unsure, certainly. And David, I think, kind of sort of can't help but smile a little bit.
Of course.
Because he knows what's going to go down. And
of course.
And he knows that it's going to be okay.
They do, like, this nodding thing. Like, they want to like, touch heads. But they can in that moment.
Yeah.
Because we haven't...
Right.
You know, done what we want to do mm-hmm. right now. So...
And
yeah,
it's so cute.
I love too how everybody is coming with a little like comedy nuggets
mm-hmm.
in everything. Might I recommend the crab cakes? They cost a small fortune. Like,
I may have overordered.
Just throwing it in there.
Yep.
But it's cool too because we talked about how the comedy in this breaks up a lot of the tension.
Yep.
And it's just like the comedic relief and stuff. But also something I realized, which was that it just speaks to how fucking awesome these people are that they have that in them in that moment to be able to do that.
Yes.
You know?
Very well said.
That's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And something that could be so serious and so scary.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Yeah.
Like,
take a minute to make a joke about the crab cakes.
Because this is still who I am.
Right.
Like, I'm just going to say it because that's very much who I am. And I'm going to throw it out there letting you know.
Right.
They cost a small fortune. Bada bing. I'm out of here.
So Patrick joins his parents
yes.
at the booth. And in Frank's words, there's not much that needs to be said when Patrick does come out to his parents. We know it will turn out well. But it's still a highly emotional moment, with a moment from Patrick that Clint's acceptance probably carries more weight. It's made even lovelier with that shot of the roses and Stevie looking on with concern and anticipation. So even if things had turned out poorly, Patrick still has a family he can turn to.
You know what really reaches out to me in this scene, and I think is pretty significant too, is Patrick's mother. How a couple times she like tries to pull it out of him.
Yeah.
And Clint is there just like, okay. Hold on. Let him talk. For me, it seems like she is so excited for him to speak his truth, to be himself and to be open with them and with himself and with everybody else, really, for that matter. I think she's so excited for him to speak the words that it can't come fast enough for her. And that's so sweet to me.
Yeah.
That it's that, you know, it could have been anything else, like we said. But that his dad is like, all right, honey, a couple times, like, all right, just let him talk. You know, when he does, it's everything. And Frank is right. We know how this is going to end
right.
because we know that they know.
Right. It's not so much about how the information is going to be received. This scene transforms into a story about how the information is going to be received to the moment being just about
Patrick yes. having the space to say the words.
Yes, 100%. This moment is Patrick's. It's yeah. his. He owns this. He owns this scene entirely. The parents just being so sweet and so loving and so supportive is like the cherry on top of it all.
Yeah, exactly.
I do love that Patrick's dad is like, I don't get David's clothes.
And I love that Patrick's response is such a like grandpa response. You will in time. Like,
I know.
I think that's also such a like moment because it is like a glimpse into this relationship between father and son that clearly goes 30 years deep, you know, like,
yeah,
that they have this like way of be like talking with each other, you know, like, oh, you will in time, you know,
yeah.
like it's so specific and cute.
Yeah. I have never been prouder in my life or in the history of the show than when they chose for Patrick's mother to speak the words, happy birthday, my sweet boy.
Aww.
Wow. Like the fact that that is happening on his actual birthday and you're just, it's so perfect. Like the fuck? This is so perfect. And she speaks those words and every single fucking time I hear that, dude, I lose my shit because it is his birthday. This is him. This is him 100%.
I love so much of what she says in this moment too, because, you know, she says like, you are the only thing in this world that matters to us.
Yeah.
And if David makes you happy, then that makes us happy. And that's all that matters. That's what makes this episode of television so ginormously significant and absolutely. Magnanimous because it's the power of story. Seeing a world like Schitt's Creek represented to us in what is widely understood to be the most like consumed media in the world right now, yeah. television, it helps to create that space in our brains, in our creativity, in our imagination, in our hearts, you know, because so much of what we see becomes the norms that we live by and that we accept for ourselves, right? And so if we can see a world like Schitt's Creek, if we can see a coming out story like Patrick's, if we can see a parent's acceptance and love like the Brewers on the TV, it allows for that to be true and capable of us to happen in yes. reality. And that is why this portrayal and this way of telling this story is like second to none. Because it not only is about the ownership and the empowerment to come out in the way that is right to you, when it's right to you, how and why and all those things, owning that for yourself, but it also is about the people around you
yeah.
and how they can react and how they can be supportive of you. It's a roadmap for that. And this episode, this show, is the blueprint.
Absolutely.
For every other show in the world, take notes.
And that's what's so amazing about this. You know, the fact that Dan has now signed on to be
yeah, a he writer. Has a deal with ABC.
That just gives me even more hope that yeah. there are going to be more stories like this because they need to be told. I feel like that's a job for what? Everybody.
So as the episode wraps up, we cut to the party's over. Everyone's gone. And David and Patrick are having a one final dance. Patrick is like, so how long have they known?
He's no dummy.
He
knows his parents.
He saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah. Just like we can all tell that Patrick wasn't surprised.
Right. Clearly, Patrick got his acting chops from his parents.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So David gets to tell him that, yeah, my dad kind of like messed up, but he thought they knew and like, you know, he didn't mean it like as anything other than that. And I mean, they're fine, but they're not alone.
Twyla's there. And this is very important, I feel like. And I feel like it was on purpose because as Dan talked about in his, when he received the GLAAD award, and as we've heard him talk about before, Sarah, his sister,
was very much a part of his coming out. And she was his support system. And mind you, he had amazing parents. He has amazing parents who supported him and who were fine. But she was amazing with him and amazing for him when he needed that. The best possible sister, I guess you could say that she could be. And I think it was all too perfect that she was in that final scene with them.
That wasn't a coincidence.
Yeah. And if it was, damn. You hit me right in the feels, man. But yeah, it's so perfect.
It is. And I love, too, that she doesn't have to say anything so, like, lofty or whatever. She's Twyla. I got to close up in five, guys, you know? But in she's fact, there.
You even see the face that David gives Twyla when he looks at her when she says that. It's just kind of this, like, thing. Like, it's this smile, like, uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
We know.
It's sweet, and it's perfect, and I love it. And, this show, man, it does things to me, and it's so smart, and it's so, like, damn you. And yeah, I'm better for it. I could tell you that. I can really tell you that.
Yeah. Before we get into our final thoughts, we thought it would be fun. Recently, Dan did a interview and like a whole spread with GQ.
Yes.
Which, if you haven't seen
Woo.
The videos for that,
my God,
check them out. It's maybe some of the funniest Dan has ever been in his life. Like, no joke.
Lady J loves it so much that it's her screensaver on her phone.
Well, yeah, obviously. He's wearing a green suit. Yeah. Forgive me. Okay. I'm only human. But so part of the spread was this interview. It was like Q&A. And the interviewer asked, one of the show's most dramatic and most acclaimed stories came last year when it was revealed that Patrick hadn't come out to his parents. When and how did you figure out how to tell a coming out story that avoided all the cliched, often regressive tropes you often see in these narratives? And Dan's response, I knew the whole time that Patrick was not out to his parents, and that was going to be his big secret. Not that harboring the secret of your sexual identity or orientation is wrong, but in terms of creating attention in the show, there had to be something about him that wasn't perfect. Up until that point, it was the honeymoon phase of their relationship. Everything was great. So we had the daunting task of figuring out what the coming out episode was going to look like. How were we going to tell a coming out story that hadn't been already told? It was, I think, the most challenging episode I've written in the entirety of the series. The minute that I realized how to do it, I was thinking about a concern that has been dramatized in so many shows. Parents being upset and asking themselves, did I do something wrong? Is it me? What did I do to have a queer kid? And I thought, what if their concern played into that? But the twist was that their concern came from, how did we not create a space comfortable enough for him to feel open and free to tell us? Once we had that twist, I knew that there was a story there that felt kind of special and that I hadn't seen it before.
Oh, love that.
You know, that's why some people are showrunners and writers and other people are watchers.
Very
and,
true.
You know, because you have to have that kind of ingenuity and creativity inside of you to know the story that you want to tell and to figure out a way to approach it in a way that's never been done before.
Yeah.
And I mean, listen to the last 2 hours conversation and, you know, that's that. So,
yeah.
This seems so pointless now, but let's get into our first segment.
Who wore what best?
Woo, woo.
Would it not be us though if we didn't include this?
I mean,
come on.
It still is our podcast.
So I actually had a really hard time in this episode picking something. And I'm going to do something that I was, you know what? It makes sense to me because it's all too perfect. And because I struggled with who to pick. So I'm actually going to go for David, Moira, Johnny, Alexis and Stevie at Patrick's party, because I love the scene when you see all of them together just kind of looking at the conversation that Patrick is having with his parents
and then immediately averting their gaze when he looks at them.
But you also look at them and they look phenomenal.
They do.
They all look great. It's very hard to pick. I mean, David is wearing a very significant sweater in this. And I've never seen her wear this wig before. And I want to see her wear it all the time because it's gorgeous with this like silver sequin dress. Alexis with this like bun in her hair. And, come on. I mean, and Johnny looking more dapper than ever as usual. And then Stevie's just fucking Stevie looking, crushing any look that she has. And I loved it. The looks on their faces, the love in their hearts, the body on their clothes. Or yep, said that. The clothes on their body. It's going to go to all of them. The loves of my life.
I love it. I love yeah. it. Yeah, for me, it's just basically, or simply, I should say, David's sweater. Yes. I love it. I love it.
It's a good sweater.
It says everything it needs to say. You know yeah. what I mean? Considering that David sweaters are often like, you know, iconic and like right. special and like meaningful to the episode. And
they have little messages on them.
Yeah. And this is another example of that for sure.
Well, nice. Yeah. I love it. Well, now to our next segment.
Ratings. I mean, really? Like, is this even a question? This episode is getting a hard 5 out of 5 best friends, sons, boyfriends, parents for me. I love it. It's perfect. There's nothing to say more than I've already said.
I'm going to give it the same. For me, it is a very obvious 5 out of 5 touched by grapes. for everything. I mean, this episode is just everything. It's not often that we can say about each storyline that we dig it and that we feel it and that we're here for it. But I really am in this one. I really liked Moira's storyline in this.
Yeah.
And then hello, the obvious storyline in all this. It's just beautifully written, beautifully acted, beautifully done, beautifully put together. So 5 out of 5 touched by grapes.
That's going to do it for us.
I think so.
As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on social media at Up Schitt's Creek Pod on Instagram and Facebook and at Up Schitt's Creek on Twitter. You can also send us an email at upschittscreekpod@gmail.com. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/upschittscreek, where you can subscribe to one of 3 tiers with varying benefits and rewards. Our extended episodes tier gets you access to a ad-free extended version of each episode 1 day early. And till next time.
We love you, shitheads. Kielvage.
Blessings. This episode is brought to you by the generous donations of Emily and Lucina.
Well, hello, you.